love sports? Then you've come to the right place. It's time for the Sports Ticket. Your ticket to local, regional, state, and national sports talk on KD Country 94. And now, here is your master of ceremonies, Wade Gershner.
Allow myself to introduce myself.
And he's joined by his trusty sidekick, Dusty Dinus.
I respect women. I love women. I respect them so much that I completely stay away from them.
And now you'll all be quiet when we start the show.
Boom, 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 boom. Bang, 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 bang. Boom, 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 boom. Bang, 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 bang.
Two receivers right, one left. Kelce closes the tight end. Left side of the formation. Now a quick hitting draw. Kareem Hunt at the 40-yard line. Angling left, 30. He's at the 25, 20, 15, 10, 5. Touchdown, Kansas City. The rookie Kareem Hunt. Anthony Thomas is in the backfield to the right of Alex Smith. Tyreek Hill comes in trotting in front of the face mask of Alex Smith. Now wheels back. They face it. They go on a shovel pass to Kelce. 10. It's on the 5. He leaps into the end zone. Touchdown, Kansas City. A shovel pass to Travis Kelce. And the Chiefs have a lead of 6.
Chiefs go on to win it 27-20. They're 2-0 in the AFC West, tied with the Broncos and the Raiders, who are both 2-0. The Chargers are 0-2, and that's who the Chiefs get coming up this Sunday in L.A., where there might be more Chiefs fans than Charger fans. And you can hear that this Sunday on Z96.3 Lake, your home for the Chiefs in North Central Kansas. Before we break down the Chiefs, hear from Andy Reid and Alex Smith, and move on to college football with K-State, KU, Nebraska, and more. Local sports information, good weekend for the Beloit volleyball team, I know. They had did very well in the tournament.
Yeah, they won the Republic County Tournament Championship there in Belleville on Saturday. They went 5-0, beating Smith Center in the championship in 3 games, and they're now 14-2 on the season. Smith Center finishes 4-1 on the weekend in second place there, and Smith Center is now 10-4 this year. Then also at the Tescott tournament, Sylvan Lucas went 4-1 and finished in second place, losing to Bennington in 3 in the championship match. That was actually their first loss of the season, so they're now 15-1 on the year. And Southern Cloud placed 3rd at Tescott, winning over Wilson in 2. All of those scores for our area teams that were competing this weekend in the Republic County and Tescott tournaments can all be found at ncksports.com if you missed any of those over the weekend. So that's kind of what's going on in the local sporting world of what happened with volleyball for area teams on Saturday.
All right, Chiefs win yesterday 27-20. Let's break it down, pros and cons of this one. For me, pros, fourth quarter again, Chiefs for the most part dominated. I know the Eagles got a late touchdown and then recovered a onside kick, but the Chiefs were in control of the game. In the fourth quarter, they took control of the game, just like they did against New England. Kareem Hunt seems to be the real deal. 13 carries, 81 yards, and maybe the biggest play of the game, the 53-yard touchdown run that allowed the Chiefs to answer Philadelphia's touchdown and go up 13-10. 2 touchdown runs for Hunt. Second one was very impressive, able to keep the legs churning and backing his way into the end zone. He had 3 receptions for 28 yards. Alex Smith, I thought, was very solid yesterday. He didn't have a great offensive line in front of him, at least in the first half. He hung in there, took a lot of hits, 21-28 for 251 yards and a touchdown to Travis Kelce, which you heard just a moment ago on that shovel pass. And then probably his 2 biggest plays of the game, in my opinion, was a 5-yard scramble on 3rd and 4 on that drive that gave them the lead. And then it really made me feel good when the Chiefs, I thought, were going to be conservative up 20-13 and just run the ball. And they took a shot deep down the field on the right sideline, a 35-yard pass right on the money by Smith to Conley. And I was like, whoa, because that was a play I did not expect. I figured the Chiefs were going to be conservative like they were last year. They would have run the ball. They would have punted it. They would have tried to pin him with the short field. And that's not what the Chiefs did. They went for it. And I think that tells you how much confidence Andy Reid has in Alex Smith right now. The only question I have is, what happens when Alex throws his first interception?
Yeah.
Then what happens to the play calling, especially if it's early in a game? Another pro, Travis Kelce, 8 catches, 103 yards, and a touchdown. More on him in a moment. And another pro to me was the defense played very well for the most part yesterday. Early on, not so great, but later on, they played very well, especially in the fourth quarter. Chris Jones, 3 sacks, 2 forced fumbles, and an interception. Justin Houston looks like he's 100% healthy, and they're able to overcome the absence of Eric Berry. So I thought the defense, all in all, was not bad, not great in the first half, even though they held them to 3 points. They gave up some big chunks of yardage, but you can't argue with what they did defensively, holding them to 13 points until that very final drive of the game when they're playing prevent and they're up by 14. So let's hear from Andy Reid, because his quarterback, Alex Smith, was being hit on about every single play in the first half. It was like a jailbreak. And you started to wonder if the Chiefs could do anything offensively.
I thought Alex did a nice job. He was resilient as he went. He took some big hits there. And he rebounded and kept playing. Most of all, he kept the guys around him fighting. And that's an important trait when you're a quarterback in this league, to get everybody, not only yourself, but everybody around you to rise up and continue to fight when things aren't going great. You're going to have games like this where not everything goes the way you draw it up. I mean, that's just how things work. There's a lot of competition, a lot of parity in this league. So for our guys to come out and battle like they did and just stay with it, and Alex and the leaders on defense, we were without one of our better leaders here in Eric Berry, and those young guys had to learn. I mean, they had to step up and learn how to fend for themselves, and they did that.
They did. And, you know, Eric Murray did a nice job and saved a touchdown on one play. So there are lots of things to be positive about coming out of this game. Now, if you have concerns, you got to be concerned about the offensive line. And we said it Friday when we were previewing this game that the Eagles are much better defensively than New England, especially with the pass rush, because New England didn't have a pass rush. Mm-hmm. Alex Smith had all day. What's this offensive line going to do against a good pass rush? And the answer in the first half, not good. Second half, better. And I think part of that was adjusting in the play calling by Andy Reid, getting the ball out of Alex Smith's hands a little bit quicker there in the third quarter. And then giving the ball to Kareem Hunt, that helped a little bit as well. And then another concern is injury on the offensive line. With your center, Mitch Morse, they say a foot sprain. I would guess he'll probably be out this week, but you don't know for sure. I think the biggest con, though, is Travis Kelce. And, you know, Kelce is a guy that I'm gonna say it right now. He is Terrell Owens Jr. He is Terrell Owens Jr. Terrell Owens brought so much to a team in regards to his playmaking ability, his passion for the game, his emotion, his excitement, and he worked hard, but he just never could control that, to where basically eventually it led to him being out of the league sooner than he should have been, because he was a problem in the locker room. He became a problem. He wasn't that way at the very beginning of his NFL career, but he became that. And Travis Kelce, it's funny because yesterday, watching the game and then following some things on Twitter during the commercial breaks, I just had to laugh because it was so predictable. So Kelce gets the taunting penalty when he taunts the Philadelphia bench after Kareem Hunt's 53-yard run. That's right. Kelce had nothing to do with that run. But he starts taunting the Eagle bench, which, by the way, his brother's on that team. So he gets a 15-yard penalty, which gives the Eagles good field position after the kickoff. The Chiefs have the kickoff from the 20. And then the Eagles move the ball right down the field, and they're able to tie the ballgame. That 15 yards for unsportsmanlike conduct by Travis Kelce was a pretty big penalty. And Andy Reid had every right to chew his rear end when he came off the field. But this is nothing new. This is what Travis Kelce does. And I still go back to the interview he had with Mike Tirico before the kickoff game against the Patriots in week one, where he said, I'm more mature now. I'm more responsible. I know I can't do those things. Mike Tirico goes, all because you were named a captain of a playoff game? Yeah. Yeah. Now, I can't do that stuff. I know that. I'm a leader. Okay, we've had two games. He has two unsportsmanlike conduct penalties, one against New England and one against Philadelphia. And it's one thing to talk it. It's another thing to walk it. And here's the thing about Travis Kelce. So the reaction, of course, after he gets that penalty on Twitter was what? Anger.
Yeah.
Chiefs fans, just put him on the bench. We're tired of this. He can't keep doing these things. You know what will really teach him? Putting him on the bench. And I'm shaking my head going, no, you don't put him on the bench.
I don't say that.
You don't put him on the bench.
I get frustrated, but that's insane.
You don't put him on the bench. No, you don't. You have to do something, but not that. So, because he's too important to this team. And then, next thing you know, Kelce ends up getting that shovel pass and leaping into the end zone, scoring a touchdown. Not too many tight ends that can do that. And he had 8 catches, 103 yards, and a touchdown. And then the responses fired back at those people was, that's why you don't bench him. So there's the good and the bad with Travis Kelce. There is the unbelievable potential and tremendous playmaking ability of Travis Kelce. He's like a wide receiver in a tight end's body to an extent. He's not afraid to put his body in peril and dive over defenders. He did it twice yesterday. And his teammates, for the most part, from what I understand, they do like him. They enjoy him. He's fun. He's emotional. He's passionate. Well, that's the same thing you heard about Terrell Owens early in his career. Oh, he's just young and exuberant. But eventually, that's going to wear on you. And I got to think that if Travis Kelce ends up having a penalty that costs the Chiefs a football game, and so far it has not, but I think it will someday. Can you imagine the Chiefs are in Foxborough against New England, and Kelce gets a 15-yard unsportsmanlike after the Chiefs get an important first down and get in field goal range to beat the Patriots? Can you imagine what Chiefs fans are going to say then? And they would be right to be mad at Travis Kelce. Don't give me this, I've learned, I'm mature, I was a captain on a playoff game, and now I'm suddenly a mature young man. No, you're not. And he could have really been flagged after he got the touchdown yesterday, doing the flapping of the wings where he looks like a moron. Some people love it. I thought he looked like an idiot, but some people loved it. And don't get me wrong, I like Travis Kelce. I enjoy the way he plays. I do like his passion, enthusiasm, but we don't have to taunt the other team, especially when you didn't do anything on the play. Okay, that hurts your team. So that's all about me. That's all about I. And there is me in the word team. There's not I, but there is me. And Travis Kelce, with all the reality show thing he did, and he's in commercials, and he mouthed off about the officiating after last year's game against Pittsburgh, even though he had some drop passes, and he gets on ESPN SportsCenter, then he ends up being a guest on NFL Live or Game Day or whatever it was, countdown before the playoffs after the Chiefs are eliminated. He is a guy that people know is going to say things. He's going to do things. And that's what Terrell Owens did. And it was good for a while, and it was different. It was neat. Some people said going to the star in the middle of Dallas Cowboy Texas Stadium was really, well, that's take that, America's team. Some people thought that was all right. Some people were like, no, that's crossing the line. And then eventually from that point forward, it seemed like T.O.'s trying to one-up himself over and over. And you start to wonder if that's what Travis Kelce is trying to do, if he's more about himself than the team. I think he cares about the team. I think he really wants to win. At the same time, I think he wants to be the center of attention. And yesterday was another example of that. So let's hear from Alex Smith, because he was asked, leader of the team, the actual leader of the team, Alex Smith, quarterback of Kansas City Chiefs, a guy that's played very well 3 weeks 1 and 2, a guy that might be in his last season with the Chiefs. There have been reports that the Chiefs had already entertained trades for Alex Smith before the season started, believe it or not. Alex Smith said the other day he feels like this is his last year in Kansas City, that Mahomes will be the quarterback next year. What does Alex Smith think of Travis Kelce's antics?
We love the passion around here. We talk a lot about having personality and letting the personality show and playing with passion, enjoying what you do, right? Your teammates, I mean, enjoying that kind of atmosphere. And he's a guy that plays with a ton of passion. And certainly the touchdown run was an example of that. I mean, how much it means to him, how much he works and sacrifices every day to go out there. Certainly, yeah, you've seen times the last 2 weeks where it's gotten better of him too, though. So I think it's a balance. I'm not trying to eliminate any of that passion, though, and that will, you know, that hunger. So he's just got to be smart at times because it could end up costing you for sure.
Your thoughts, Dusty, on Travis Kelce acting like he's 9?
I mean, I agree with Alex Smith, what he just said. I mean, you can't take it all away from him because that's how he plays. That's how he's always been. And I think he is a figure that people gravitate towards, I want to say. I did when he first came into the league, and you know, some of the things, the touchdown dances that he did weren't anything different than what some people have done in the past. And some of that stuff is fun. I don't have a problem with the flying the eagle wings. I do have a problem maybe a little bit after he'd already been penalized for taunting.
Yeah.
But I think he probably would have done a dance in the end zone had he not been mauled right away, because that's usually his MO, is like right when he gets in there, he's going to do some kind of – he probably hasn't planned out what kind of dance he's going to do if he gets into the end zone. And now it might have been something with flying eagles while he was in there, but he kind of got mauled, and I think he just did that one off the cuff. And that's when you have problems with Travis Kelce, when he's doing stuff off the cuff and it's not planned. And obviously those things need to go. I can't support any of that. Like any of the things that he does, like you said, when he acts like he's 9, Nobody can support that. But you can't come out here and say, like get on there and say, bench him. Because that'll teach him. That won't teach him. That'll make him mad.
Yeah.
And that'll make things worse, probably.
And it'll hurt the team.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you need Travis Kelce on the field.
Yes.
Whether he's dropping a couple passes here or there, Travis Kelce is one of those guys that you just love to death for about 30, 45 minutes of the game, and then he'll drop a pass, he'll fumble a ball when you think that you got something in check. He did that against the Cardinals one time. I can't remember if that was 2 years ago or last year. I can't remember.
Two years ago,
he had a fumble against the Cardinals that was not in a good spot in the game and just was kind of lackadaisical with what he was doing. And so those are the kind of things that you just pull your hair out now with all the personal foul penalties. You know, some people think it's funny. I don't.
It's not
when it hurts your team. You know, when you're in a tight game with the Jaguars and you throw your towel as if you're throwing a flag on the official, it's not funny.
Right.
It's immature is what it is. And, you know, I don't think it's a problem that seeps over into the locker room or anything like that. I think that the...
Not yet.
Right now, yeah. I think that his teammates understand who he is and they all get along with him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can tell with what your leader and your quarterback is saying is that he has a passion for the game that we all love, but you got to reel it in and you got to know when to use that passion. And I think everybody should have a passion for the game.
We got to control it.
If no matter what game you're playing, or else some of these people probably don't have a passion, they're just there for the money. But it does seep into times when you think maybe Travis Kelce, it's not about passion, it's just about me.
The audio that we played with Alex Smith talking about Travis Kelce's antics doesn't do it justice, because when you see the video with the audio of him in the press conference afterwards, Alex Smith just starts kind of snicker a little bit, and then he just starts shaking his head a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I got to answer this question again. And I'm going to tell you something, that will get old. And if it gets old with your teammates, it will become a problem in the locker room. And I think all it's going to take is Travis Kelce. And I am convinced it will happen because he just has not learned. And I don't think he really cares in regards to that point, because he's like, well, we keep winning these games when I do that. You know, we won. No big deal. But it's going to probably take a penalty like that, or him getting ejected in a big game that they lose, or him getting a penalty like that that impacts the Chiefs so negatively that it costs them the game, whether home or the road. And I will tell you, when that happens, then it could be the best thing that happens to Travis Kelce, because that might finally knock some sense into him and he might cut some of this stuff down. Or it's going to be the worst thing, because that will cost him a game, and then his teammates will finally say, we've had enough. And I think you're on that edge in that locker room. I'm not in the locker room. I don't know this for sure. But the way Alex Smith reacted physically to that question yesterday, I'm reading between the lines, is, yes, that's Travis, and he doesn't know how to control it completely, and sometimes it helps us, and sometimes it hurts us. And at the very end, Alex Smith says, hopefully it doesn't cost us a game.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you, when it caught, it's okay to poo-poo it away. When you're like, well, we won 27-20. No big deal. But if he costs them a game, let's say it's Denver, a division game, Raiders, Denver, Chargers, doesn't really matter what game, and he does something like that where he taunts the opposing sideline on a play he had nothing to do with, or anything he does that gets an unsportsmanlike conduct, and the team loses the game, I'm going to tell you something right now. Justin Houston, I can almost guarantee you, will be one that will be right in his face, whether it's on the sideline at the end of the game or in the locker room. And there will be others. And thus, it will be a cancer. And thus, it will be a gigantic problem in this team's locker room. And that's exactly what happened with Terrell Owens. I'm telling you. Terrell Owens was loved by his teammates, and it was okay. And he did it, and he did it, and he kept doing it until eventually it got old. Eventually it hurt the team. Eventually it was such a distraction that the team got tired of answering the questions, and eventually he became a cancer in the locker room. And I hope Travis Kelce doesn't become T.O. Jr., but he's on pace to go that route, okay? I don't think he's going to be that extravagant like T.O. was, with mouthing off all the time. But then again, Travis is still a young guy, He might very well think this is all about getting TV shows, another reality show, and I'm outspoken. I get to be a guest on ESPN because I say things about the official after the game and say bad things about him, even though I was guilty of dropping a couple passes in the playoff game. Travis Kelce, I think, is on the path to costing this team a game. Or he's on the path of becoming a cancer in the locker room because he draws so much attention to himself. And so that when we're talking about this, even today, right now, you're taking away from what we should be talking about. And that is the Chiefs are 2-0 and they beat a good Eagles team at home. And yet I guarantee you there are other sports talk shows that are going to be talking about this today, about Travis Kelce's antics and how it may cost them a game. And after his touchdown on the shovel pass, when he did the flapping of the arms, had he done that on the other side of the field in front of the Eagle bench, he might have got a second and he might have been ejected. And that could have cost them the game. So he is playing with fire. I'm telling you, he's playing with fire, and he's got to be very careful. And the fact that Andy Reid chewed his butt finally on the sideline, I don't know if that does any good or not. But I will say this. You should not let him be a captain of anything until he cleans that up. And obviously Andy Reid thought last year making him a captain would maybe help him understand that, hey, you're a leader on this team. And he says all the right things to Mike Tirico in a pregame interview before Thursday Night Football, and he goes out and does the complete opposite. And then if you're going to say this and do the opposite, you look like a moron when you do it. You just do. I don't know how other way to describe it. It's sometimes about him instead of the team. It should be about the team. And I think he is a team player to an extent, but I think there are times where he either forgets that or he thinks, we're good enough to beat this team. We just scored with Kareem Hunt's touchdown, even though that puts you up 13-10. Game is far from over. I'm gonna just be this type of guy that's gonna taunt the Eagles sideline. And some people are like, oh, it's just fun. It's okay. Well, they let them have fun now in the end zone with the touchdown celebrations. You don't have to go doing that right in front of the Eagle bench. And on top of it, your brother's over there for crying out loud. Class act, Travis Kelce. Class act. I mean, love what he does when he keeps it together, but that stuff's going to come back and bite this team, I'm afraid. I hope I'm wrong. I really do.
Yeah. You got to figure out the balance of what he does. If it gets to that point, you've got to figure out the balance of what he does to help this team and how many wins you have because of him.
Mm-hmm.
And because of having – that's why T.O. stayed with the Cowboys as long as he did.
Right.
I mean, you can have all those problems, but you know what? You're still going to get paid – if you go out there and win games for teams. And,
yes.
And that's you got to figure out how important that is compared to the antics.
When he becomes bigger than the team and it becomes a distraction and the first questions after a game is about Travis Kelce costing them a game, that's when you have a major problem. And right now it's a problem. It's an issue. It's not a major issue yet. And I hope for the Chiefs' sake and the fans' sake, it doesn't become a gigantic issue. But, man, it's trending towards like it will be. He just has not learned. All right. But he is exciting to watch. Jumping over players and diving in the end zone. Hey, I'm all for it. I'm cool with it. He's a great player. But he could be even a greater player if he would cut some of that stuff out. All right. The NFL wrap here. The AFC West is the toughest division of football, it does appear. The Chiefs, the Raiders spanked the Jets yesterday. The Raiders are very good. We knew that coming in. Denver now 2-0. They just flat out whipped the Dallas Cowboys yesterday, which was very impressive. They ran the ball pretty well. Jamal Charles ran a little bit for the Broncos. C.J. Anderson ran it well. Offensive line played well. They lost their left tackle, Garrett Bowles, to an injury. He was carted off, so that could be a big blow for their offensive line. And Trevor Siemian's playing good football, and the defense is playing very well like it usually does for Denver. So this AFC West, I think a lot of people have said, including myself, it's Raiders or Chiefs. And the Broncos are saying not so fast. And they're kind of under the radar this year compared to last year. So they are a very dangerous team. And that's one that makes you pay attention when they beat the Cowboys 42-17. Aqib Talib with a 103-yard interception return for a touchdown to ice it there late in the fourth quarter. And they held Ezekiel Elliott to 8 yards rushing on 9 carries. Cowboys kind of gave up on the running game. That was a very impressive performance yesterday. Other games, Baltimore beats Cleveland 24-10. Carolina gets by Buffalo 9-3. Arizona rallies to beat Indianapolis in overtime by a score of 16-13. Tennessee whipped Jacksonville 37-16. Of course, the Chiefs won 27-20 to improve in 2-0. They're at L.A. Chargers next week. New England beats New Orleans. Yeah, We knew New England would be okay, and they'd bounce back. 36-20, Tom Brady without basically any weapons, threw for 447 yards. Gronkowski left the game, Amendola didn't play, Hogan left the game, Dorsett left the game, all his receivers basically left the game. No problem. I'll just keep throwing it to whoever's going to catch it. Pittsburgh takes care of Minnesota, 26-9. Tampa Bay, the first game of the year, no problem with Chicago, 29-7. The Los Angeles Chargers had a chance to tie the Broncos on Monday night to open the season with a field goal. It was blocked. They lost by three. Yesterday, they get in field goal range. 44-yard field goal, wide right against Miami. Dolphins beat the Chargers 19-17. That's just like the Chargers last year. Heartbreaking defeats early in the year, and then their season spins out of control. And Phillip Rivers was asked after the game what he thought about the crowd, because it was at L.A., there's a lot of Dolphin fans there. Mm-hmm. He said, well, it was really enjoyable to hear how many Dolphin fans were there after we missed the field goal.
Yeah.
Phillip Rivers did not want to leave San Diego.
He's
a San Diego guy. He was not happy. And if I kind of feel for him a little bit. I know a lot of people say, oh, he looks like a jerk and this and that. Actually, if you talk to his teammates and hear from his teammates, they love him because he's such a tremendous competitor. He does wonderful work in the San Diego and California community. Charity, has a ton of kids, by the way. He sounds like he's a good father, too. There's nothing to really not like about Rivers other than if he throws a lot of interceptions, if you're a Charger fan, and the fact that, yes, he gets emotional and fired up, too, but he doesn't go over the line like Travis Kelce does, not nearly as often. No. So some people don't like Phillip Rivers, but I respect him, and the guy is a gunslinger, and the guy flat out sometimes says what he thinks, and from that standpoint, I don't have a major problem with it. He doesn't do it all the time.
Hey, I was talking about that Tuesday when I had this show here, and I love him. I if he was my quarterback, I wouldn't have a problem with it at all.
I'd play hard for him.
Yeah.
I would, because I know he wants to win badly. Oakland beat the Jets 45-20, as we mentioned, and Denver big over the Dallas Cowboys 42-17. Washington Redskins beat the Rams 27-20, and the Seahawks, they were able to get by the 49ers 12-9. And Sunday Night Football last night, it was Atlanta taking care of Green Bay 34-23. The Falcons are off to a 2-0 start. All right, now we move on to college football, where it was not a good weekend for anybody. It was not good for KU. It was not good for K-State. Not good, of course, for Nebraska. More on that in a moment. Not good for Missouri. Guess if you're an Oklahoma Sooner fan, it was all right.
Yeah.
But other than that, ugh, not good at all. So let's start with K-State, shall we? Do we have to? Yes, we do. Lots of things to break down here. Let's hear from Bill Snyder first, head coach of K-State, after their 14-7 loss at Vanderbilt.
You know, Vanderbilt is a good defensive football team. I thought they, you know, they covered well. They pressured the quarterback pretty well. We dropped a ton of passes. We busted some assignments. But that's, you know, takes nothing away from what they did because I thought they, you know, they played well.
Yeah, Bill taking the high road. That's cool. Listen, I don't think Vanderbilt played that well. I don't think Vanderbilt played that well. I think K-State beat themselves in this game. I still think K-State's 14 points better than Vanderbilt. That's what I predicted last week. I know you predicted a solid win for K-State as well. To me, I don't know where do you begin. Well, first of all, if you want to blame it all on officiating, you can. That's fine. That's your prerogative. I will say that was a bad overturn. I think that was a call that had it been called down by contact, it wouldn't have been overturned. And that's the thing. It's the overturn. I don't know how there was anything conclusive. The call on the field was a fumble by Vanderbilt's quarterback, Shermer. It was recovered by Kendall Adams, returned for a touchdown. K-State is up 14-7 at that point in time. And the K-State, the 17,000 fans at least that were there at Vanderbilt in Nashville, were going bonkers. And then they review it. And there's nothing to see that's conclusive to show that it should be overturned. And I think the same thing would have applied the other way. Had they called it down by contact, I don't know how you could have ruled it a fumble. So to me, you just have to say the play stands as called is what should have been the call. And I don't know what – they must have had a camera angle that none of us watching TV had. And I'm having a hard time believing that they did. And that negated a touchdown. So that was a big call that went against K-State. And I must ask this question. And I don't know how it works. Maybe you'd have the answer to this. K-State is playing an SEC school at the SEC school's home field. How do we have SEC officials?
I really
because here's
know.
Where I'm confused. when Oklahoma played at Ohio State last week, it was Big 12 officials, which I still don't think that's probably right either.
Yeah.
But at least it was at Ohio State. Here you had SEC officials at SEC game on Vanderbilt's home field. To me, that should be a Pac-12 officiating crew at ACC. We're not into conference play yet for most of these conferences. I don't understand that. I don't get that. Now, I'm not sitting here going to tell you that there's a conspiracy to beat K-State. But I have to wonder if the officials looking at that go, well, this could go either way. Well, which way would help the SEC? Well, you know, let's just go ahead and negate it. We can claim we had some kind of angle. You have to wonder a little bit. Just a little bit. I'm not saying for sure. I'm just saying you have to consider it. But that wasn't the reason K-State lost this game. That was not the reason they lost this game. You had a punt return for a touchdown negated by a penalty. Jesse Ertz was their only source of offense. 24 carries, 126 yards. Was 10 of 28 throwing the ball for 76 yards, which is misleading because K-State had a ton of drops. A missed 42-yard field goal by your kicker. Lots of drop passes. Let's just talk about the final drive. Let's not even talk about all the other stuff. Let's talk about the final drive for K-State. They're down 14-7. Heath drops one at the 5. It was a little bit behind him. Should have caught it. Another drop.
It was when it came, it was right in his hands, though.
But it, well,
it was behind him. I'm not saying it's not.
He had to adjust his body.
But
in fairness to him.
He has both hands on the football as it's coming in.
Well, like
you've got to reel that
in. Well, like I said. Well, that's what I just said.
Yeah.
I said it's a little behind him. And I got to give all the details here because it was behind him.
It was. Yeah.
It was not a perfect pass, okay? It was behind him. And, yes, it hit him in the hands, and he should have caught it. But it, when your momentum is going to another way, another side, and you have to stop and try to bring your hands back and catch it, it's a lot easier watching on TV in a Barca lounger than actually playing the game. So I'm going to cut him just a hair of slack to point out in defense of Heath, the ball was not on the money. It was a little behind him. But I agree. He should have at that level. When you're a recruit playing Division I football, that's a play you have to make. So I'm with you.
Yeah.
But it's not super simple easy. But he should have made it. There's no question. Here's the other thing. You had two penalties on that drive. Dalton Reisner with the personal foul. That was not good. The false start obviously hurt them as well. And then the fourth down and 8 play, and listen, Jesse Ertz played his butt off, okay? He competed. But on 4th and 8, you got to throw the ball. You've got to throw the, you've got to know the situation, and you've got to throw the football. And if you go back and watch it, and when a play developed right away, I'm like, oh, my God, he's got a guy open. And he did not throw it. Isaiah Harris was wide open. I got the still shot on Twitter right off my TV. Not my TV, somebody else's TV, but I could have done the same thing. And Isaiah Harris, it was a really good scheme by K-State. They cleared out underneath, and Isaiah Harris came across, and he was wide open by 5 to 10 yards right over the middle, right in front of Jesse Ertz. And Jesse Ertz didn't pull the trigger, and then he rolled right, kind of felt pressure that really wasn't there, which Alex Smith and he are similar from that standpoint. He rolled right, and then you got to throw the ball up. At that point in time, you roll right and you're running out of time, you got to throw it up. Maybe you get a pass interference penalty. Maybe there's a deflection. You got to at least give one of your series a chance. And maybe Jesse Ertz was like, well, they're just going to drop it again anyway, so I'm going to run it. I don't know. I'm not putting this whole game on Jesse Ertz. Believe me, I'm not.
No.
But that's a horrible decision. It's 4th down and 8. You got to throw the football. You've got to throw the football. And to think that you can navigate your way through the defense, which he basically had to run 15 yards to get a first, okay? 8 yards from scrimmage, but he was 6-7 yards behind the line of scrimmage. That was not a good decision. It didn't give you a chance to get the 4th down conversion. He also had 2 very questionable interceptions that he threw. The decisions were not good. Right after he made one mistake, K-State gets the ball back on a fumble. Then he makes the second mistake. And that, in essence, was the difference in the game, that pick. Vanderbilt turned it into points. Vanderbilt wins 14-7. So there's a lot of blame to go around here. You can blame Ertz for the 2 picks. You can blame him on 4th and 8. You can blame the receivers for not catching the ball. You can blame the field goal kicker for missing a field goal. You can blame the person with the penalty on the punt return that was negated by that penalty. You can blame the SEC officials and their crew. You can blame Dominique Heath for the drop catch at the 5. We can go on and on. You can blame as many people as you possibly want. The only people you probably can't blame is the defense. I thought the defense played very well and deserved to win the ball game. But you can blame Dana Dimmel. You can blame your offensive coordinator because I'm going to throw this out there. And I'm telling you that Chiefs and K-State are very similar sometimes. I swear I'm watching the same thing every once in a while in certain ways. Last year, Kansas City Chiefs in a game had Tyreek Hill run for, what was it, 68-yard touchdown run? And he never ran the ball another time.
Titans, wouldn't it?
I think so.
Yeah.
Titans or Tampa, maybe Titans. He never ran the ball again. The rest of the game, never ran the ball again. Whose fault was that? He wasn't hurt. It's the coaching staff's fault. What's the deal? Is there something wrong with Justin Simmons? Has he ticked off somebody
on
that?
He did early. He didn't play in the first two games.
Well, I know that.
Yeah, so I don't know what.
But then he comes. Yeah, but here's the thing. But apparently he's out of the doghouse. So he's out of the doghouse. And Alex Barnes did nothing running the football. It was just Jesse Ertz run left, Jesse Ertz run right, Jesse Ertz run up the middle, Jesse Ertz. So, and they even asked, so Justin Simmons, when's he going to come in? And then he came in, and then he looked great. 3 carries, 41 yards on the one drive. And then that's it.
Yeah.
He doesn't carry the ball again. What are you doing? I mean, I understand if Justin Simmons carries the ball 3 times for 5 yards, you're like, okay, he just doesn't have it. Mm-hmm. I can understand if his last 2 carries, first carry went for 28, and his next 2 went for 4. Okay, fine. 3 carries, 41 yards. And he didn't get the ball again the rest of the game. What, we're too lazy to call his number? Oh, give it to Ertz. Hey, wait, what run, Dana? Ertz. Which way? Who cares? Just run Ertz. We can't catch it. Well, maybe we should let somebody else run the ball, Dana. Nope, Ertz. Not even my son. Ertz. I like that Ertz kid. Let's get him beat up so much that he's not ready for the next game. Okay, I'm exaggerating a bit. But what is up with that? Justin Simmons ran the ball effectively, 41 yards in about a span of 45 seconds, and then he doesn't run the ball the rest of the game. He was in the game later on, but he was just a guy standing next to Jesse Ertz in pass protection. Can you explain that? Because if he's in the doghouse for the first 2 games, fine, he doesn't play. But if you put him on the field to play, and he carries the ball 3 times for 41 yards, and then he didn't say anything on the sideline to get him benched again or mouthed off because he was still in the game on that very final drive next to Jesse Ertz, why didn't they call his number more often? Can you explain that?
I can't explain it.
It would also help protect your quarterback a little bit.
Yeah,
it also makes the defense key on 2 guys instead of 1.
I can't explain half of the things that they do with the running back position over the last 10, 15 years because they got guys that come in and do things like Justin Simmons, a guy that's done that his whole career. Like, he comes in and does something good, and then he's not out there the next. Now, like you say, he was out there, but most of the time, he's not even out there the next drive.
Yeah.
And Alex Barnes has really not done a whole lot all year. I mean, he had a good game against Charlotte. I mean, he could have had a bigger game against Charlotte, probably. I don't know. The running back is supposed to be a point of depth, too. That's what drives me nuts about it. Yeah. If Alex Barnes isn't producing, what are we talking so much about how much depth we have for? If you're going to let Stillman come out for one possession and then have a good possession and then not give him the ball again, if you're not going to play Dalvin Warmack or Mike McCoy or Tyler Burns, they've got 5 guys that they feel confident in at the running back
position. Apparently not.
And they're only using one of them. And he's not producing when he was out there on Saturday. So I can't explain what they're doing at running back.
Jesse Ertz carried the ball 24 times in this game. Dusty, Justin Simmons and Alex Barnes carried it a combined 11.
Yeah. And I get the
so
Alex
they gave Barnes
thing,
a chance.
They gave him that chance gave, early, right, and it wasn't working.
But they didn't give Simmons much of a chance the other night. They didn't give anybody else a chance.
No.
And I understand if somebody like Warmack's not getting pass protection. Okay, he doesn't play on a passing down. I get it. But he should maybe get a shot at it. But he shouldn't even get a shot at it. Simmons should keep getting the ball. 3 carries, 41 yards. You're going to get your quarterback killed.
Yeah, that's another thing is, like, you've got a quarterback here that has a history of getting hurt.
Yes.
Why not try to protect him? But, I mean, but then you're changing what you do as an offense when he can actually do it. But I guess what I'm saying is you can't be concerned, I guess, about him getting hurt when that's your offense. When he's been consistent in doing all these things with the quarterback run game, he's better than Jake Waters at the quarterback run game. I can promise you that.
Oh, sure.
So when you look at that, and this is something K-State's always done, then it's hard to say, well, don't run Jesse Ertz. I don't disagree with you on the running back.
They had Ellett Roberson. He was a pretty good quarterback. They didn't keep giving him the ball and have Sproles only get it 3 times. Sproles still got the ball.
Well, you know, yeah.
And Sproles was a really good
and
talent.
Sproles
but
is way
these
better
other,
than what they've got
well,
right
well,
now.
Could be. We don't know. We really don't know.
Well, yeah, I mean, you're talking about one of the best ever.
Yeah, I know, but you get my point.
If
guys are on the sideline, I mean, you know, Kurt Warner we didn't know anything about until he became an NFL quarterback because of an injury.
Yeah.
Nobody knew Tom Brady was going to be the greatest quarterback of all time, perhaps. He was a 6th-round draft pick, and he would have been on the bench if Drew Bledsoe didn't get hurt. We don't know for sure.
I get that.
We don't know that Justin Simmons can't be an NFL running back. We don't. Bryce Brown didn't do a heck of a lot in college. He went to the NFL for at least a while.
Yeah.
Okay, we don't know for sure. We really don't. K-State hasn't given us a chance to watch these guys to get enough carries to see what they can do. And let's be honest, three carries is not enough time to really get in a rhythm.
No.
Although, quite honestly, 3 for 41, that's an average of 14 yards a carry. Well, that stinks. We better not run him anymore. There's so many reasons why they need to be more diverse. First of all, you protect your quarterback. Yeah, you can still run him, but maybe you run him 17 times instead of 24, okay? You run Soman because that's a changeup offensively where you don't key on just one guy. The defense makes it harder for them to defend you. Another thing is you can rotate in guys to give them a shot if one guy's struggling. If you have so much depth, give a few other guys a chance at it. It's just ridiculous that this is what K-State ran the other night. It was almost like they were saving their playbook for what? Baylor? In a couple weeks? Just here it's left. Just here it's right. Just here it's up the middle. Just here it's left. It just was ridiculous. It'd be one thing if Barnes didn't do anything, which he really didn't. It'd be another thing if Silma didn't do anything, which he did. 3 carries for 41 yards. And then all of a sudden it's like, well, we can't give the ball to him. We just got to keep calling Ertz's number. And I don't understand it. I do not understand that.
I can tell you this, too, that Jesse's checking a lot more than he has in the past, like making his own calls. And I think a lot of times he's calling his own number.
Well, that's a
and
problem,
so that's
too.
That's part of it, too, I think, is that he has that free roam now to do those things pre-play, to read the defense and see what he sees, and he's calling his number quite a bit. And it's not like he had a bad game running the football.
No.
But they do. I agree with you. They need to mix it up. They can't just have Jesse run the ball all the time.
Well, in the way his receivers dropped the ball, he probably thought the best play was to run it.
I was just going to go to that. I mean, we can talk all we want about Jesse not running the ball
Sure.
Justin Silman getting more carries. If 7 guys don't drop passes the whole game, that changes the complexion of what you're going to do offensively.
Yep.
No matter, once you start moving the ball, maybe Alex Barnes is going to get more carries when they get closer to the goal line. Maybe Justin Silman's going to be that guy that can punch it in for you. But when you have Byron Pringle, who's supposed to be one of the best receivers in this conference, dropping 2 easy passes that are right to him, I don't know what he's thinking, then that changes everything that you're trying to do, and it does. It's got to take away confidence from Jesse Ertz and his receivers catching a pass and saying, hey, I don't want to throw this pass because they're not catching it. I'm just going to take this and do it myself.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't put – you have to put a little bit on Jesse Ertz from Saturday night, but I don't put much on him as far as that's concerned, even if he is the guy that's saying, hey, I'm going to check into a run here, because he's the only one that had any kind of production worth anything talking about on that offense.
Well, his 2 passes were not
good. No, the second one was really bad.
The second one was really bad.
Right to the guy.
That was really bad. And then not to throw it to Isaiah Harris wide open over the middle in front of him.
And he did that throughout the game, too. He misses a lot of those.
That's on him.
Those crossing routes.
And if you're going to say, well, he doesn't throw it to wide open guy because he's afraid he's going to drop it, then he's better become a running back and put somebody else in the quarterback if that's the way he's going to feel about it. You got to trust your receivers. Even though they dropped a lot of passes, you still got to keep throwing it to them when they're wide open. I mean, that's on them. But no, Ertz is a great competitor, and I just don't know if he's going to make it through the season. If he's carrying, that's just too many carries, way too many carries. They lose to Vanderbilt 14-7. So if K-State fans thought they were going to win the national championship, that's gone now. Vandy, I think, is a decent team. I don't think they're anything super special. Now watch them beat Alabama this weekend, and then they are. Their defense is very good. Their offense is not so great, which you figured they weren't, even though they had big numbers in their first 2 weeks against nobodies. But I think this is more about K-State handing the game to Vanderbilt than it was Vanderbilt winning it. That's just my opinion.
I have no disagreement.
All right, let's move on to KU. Oh, goodness. Do we have to?
You're preconditioned to that, though, so I had to talk about something that was just terrible.
Who's in worse shape? I'll let you choose here. Who's in worse shape? KU football, Nebraska football, or Missouri football? Your call.
Ooh, that's close.
Yes, it is.
I'm going to kick Nebraska out because they've actually had some success here.
I agree.
Here recently.
I agree. I agree.
So I'm not going to say Nebraska. Mm-hmm. Their fans are just conditioned to wanting things too big.
Sure.
They're wanting too much.
Sure. Although
have
asking them
some
to beat
years.
Northern Illinois is not asking.
No. I'm not talking about this weekend.
I know. I'm playing off your words.
But when you have something go bad, then they're not at all prepared for that.
We won 9 games. Let's fire our coach.
but, man, Missouri and KU are pretty close right now.
I think Missouri is worse.
Yeah, that was not pretty.
Let's start with KU. KU loses 42 in a row now on the road and counting. They're a 21-point underdog this weekend at home to West Virginia. That should make you feel warm and fuzzy. And I don't know if that's a good – I don't know. That number should be higher maybe. They lose to Ohio 42-30. The final score doesn't indicate – the game wasn't that close. Peyton Bender, you know, he did okay. 13 of 47, 343 yards, two touchdown passes. But his one interception was a killer. The game turned when Ohio cornerback Jalen Fox picked off a pass from Bender. Down 11 points at the beginning of the third quarter, KU hoped to turn an interception by sophomore safety Mike Lee into some big momentum. But instead, on the first play following Lee's interception in Ohio's end zone, Bender threw behind Steve Sims, who did play. He reached back to try to put a hand on the ball. Sims tipped the ball in the air. Fox took advantage and returned it to the end zone. There was a penalty, negated it. But then four plays later, Ohio scored, and just like that, Ohio was up by three scores again, 32-14. That's when the game was over, right at that point in time. Mike Lee said something interesting. They asked him after the game, you know, about the interception, and he said, yeah, I didn't have a chance to catch my breath, and I had to go back out there. Because your quarterback threw a pick right after it. They were able to run the ball, though. Khalil Herbert, 19 carries, 140 yards, two touchdowns. KU actually outgained Ohio 451-450. But the defense allowed 7 yards per play. They allowed 25 points midway through the second quarter. It was 25-6, I think, or 25-7 midway through the second. They're already in a huge hole, which they did that against Central Michigan, too. And KU loses. They're 1-2. I guess the question now is, will KU win another game this year? I would say their best chance is Baylor, Iowa State, and Texas Tech, and I'd have to see if it doesn't even matter. Why bother? Waste my time. Whether the game's at home or on the road.
Texan Lawrence, so that's why I gave them that Big 12 win at the beginning of the year.
I'll still say they get one Big 12 win, which means they're 2-10, which means they're the same record as last year, which means there's no progress. To me, progress is eventually judged by wins.
Yeah,
that would mean no progress. I'm not saying fire David Beatty because there's no progress, but if he goes 1-11, I will at least understand where people are coming from, and even at 2-10, I'll understand where people are coming from. The answer is not to fire him. Now, if they lose the rest of their games this year and they get blown out by 40 every game like they were by in Turner Gill's era, then you're in trouble. And you know who's really maybe in more trouble? Shane Zinger.
Oh, yeah.
Shane Zinger should probably be fired before David Beatty, to be quite honest with you. He has had some bad hires. This would be another horrible hire if Beatty didn't work out. Charlie Weiss was the worst of all time in college football, I think.
Did you see the one play where Bender had three guys coming out? Why do you try to cut block everybody on the line on a passing play?
Because it's KU football.
I was just like so confused about that. Like you try to cut everybody, and then you missed everybody.
And then Bender's
and three guys
trouble.
Are just hovering on Bender with nothing to do.
I mean,
that's just an example of what KU football has been here recently. And it's just like, oh my goodness, that's just not a good plan at all.
So you think KU's in bad shape? 1-2. Nebraska Cornhuskers are 1-2. Scott Creer is a big Husker fan. He texts me. He goes, I don't know if the Huskers can beat KU. I go, well, you haven't watched KU play. Nebraska loses to Northern Illinois, 21-17. Tanner Lee was bad. 25 of 47, 299 yards. Hit three interceptions, one on the opening drive. When Nebraska was driving, looked like they were going to go up early. Instead, 87-yard interception return, pick six, and another pick six later in the game. So two pick sixes going the other way. 14 of Northern Illinois' points came from Tanner Lee.
Yeah.
And that's what beat them. The defense actually played pretty well. And I know Nebraska's missing Trey Bryant, their top running back, and a couple of key players on defense, but that's no excuse. You can't lose at home to Northern Illinois, who you're paying $820,000 to come beat you in your own house. So trust me, in Nebraska, this is much worse than KU losing to Ohio being 1-2 and losing 42 in a row on the road. Nebraska starting 1-2 and losing at home to Northern Illinois, a MAC school, is a major story in all of Nebraska. And it's a major story even here in the state of Kansas. It's a huge story. Even made some national headlines. And Mike Riley just got a contract extension before this game. We talked about Mike Riley was hired. We shook our heads. You and I both did. We're like, really? Mike Riley? It just didn't seem like a fit at all. Well, he's from the West Coast. He's coming to the Midwest. It didn't make sense recruiting-wise. Nice guy. Very respectable record at Oregon State. And Oregon State's not easy to... It's not like you can be a national championship contender at Oregon State. It's tough. It's not a great program. He made it respectable, made it to some bowl games, won 8-9 games a few times. But he never had that great, unbelievable year. nice guy. And this is what we do. This is what ADs do or schools do. I've talked about it before. KU, we get a jerk or a mean guy, abusive. Then we go to a really nice super guy. Then we go to a tough guy. Then we go to a real nice guy. And Nebraska went from Bo Pelini being, some people called him a jerk and a you know what, but yet he won 9 games every single year, basically. Mm-hmm. And they get him out. And who do you bring in, Dusty? A nice guy.
Yep.
Mike Riley. So the next hire is going to be a total jerk. You know that. So Sean Eichhorst.
Mangino's free right now.
Yeah, you can hire Mangino. Somebody's saying Les Miles. Well, okay, whatever.
It's because his kid's there.
That's right. Sean Eichhorst is the AD. He's the one that hired Mike Riley. He's probably on the hot seat as much as Mike Riley is. And this is very interesting what happened after the game. You don't see the AD doing a little presser after the game. It was kind of an informal presser, but he took questions from reporters. And I thought it was refreshing and honest and forthright what he said. And I loved listening to this because it's something unique and different. The AD put himself out there to answer questions from some of these reporters. And I thought he handled those questions just fine. But it is very unique, and it is somewhat odd that the AD would be the guy taking on all these questions. But I give Sean Eichhorst credit from this standpoint. A lot of athletic directors in his position after that game would have run and locked themselves in the bathroom and waited till the media left. They wouldn't have dealt with the media. They would have ignored the media. They would have said nothing. They would have waited, maybe still not said anything. And then that your fan base getting more and more in uproar, calling him a weasel, calling him a chicken, whatever it might be. I give him credit for stepping up and answering some questions. This was after the game on Saturday. Listen to this 2-minute bit with Sean Eichhorst, AD of Nebraska, addressing the problems with the Huskers and losing to Northern Illinois. And they're now 3-6 in their last 9 games, and they're 1-2 to start this year.
Well, frustration, anger, disappointment. You go through all those emotions in tough times. When you're around these good people and good young men, certainly you think about that and how to lead. It's easy to lead when things are going well, but when you have adversity, you have to stand up and think and do the right things all the time. And so the gamut of emotions, I don't think there's any question that it's not acceptable.
3-6 in the last nine games. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you look at that, can you say you're seeing progress?
Well, it's hard to, on the outside looking in,
right,
objectively say that, but I do see that. On a lot of levels, heads look like that, and I'm not concerned about the end of last season and all those sorts of things. My obligation is to these young men that are in our program and our coaches and our staff. So, we'll be judged week to week based on our performance, and today's performance was not good, not acceptable. But I'm sure I didn't get down here to listen to what Mike had to say, but I'm sure Mike would say the same thing. He's a professional, and but they have to do better. The players have to do better. They have to prepare for next week, and nobody's feeling sorry for anybody. There's no excuses to be made. We will work hard and hunker down and provide great leadership. I will provide the leadership as I have up to this point, and continue to stay positive. I'm very, very optimistic about what we have, and we need to stay together and continue to make progress. But you have to win games, and that's what we're here to do, and we didn't get that done today.
So I thought that was pretty honest from Nebraska Athletic Director Sean Eichhorst about the game and about where this program is, and he still has confidence that they'll be okay, which that's probably what he needs to say since he's the one that hired Mike Riley. But I will say there's some things that certainly are very alarming when Nebraska's lost to Northern Illinois. First of all, and we kind of knew this through the first 2 games, they've got an issue at quarterback. They've got a turnover-prone quarterback in Tanner Lee. He's thrown 7 interceptions over the course of the last 2 games. You can't win like that. The defense actually played pretty well, as we talked about, so that's a positive. And now you get Rutgers coming into town, and Rutgers is known as a dormant of the Big Ten and whatever conference they were with before they joined the Big Ten. I can't remember what conference they were part of, but Rutgers is not known as a football power. I want to tell you right now, I first of all, I don't know if Nebraska is going to sell out the stadium this weekend, because remember they got that sellout streak. Mm-hmm. And I would guess somehow, some way, it'll be extended for this week. And if they lose to Northern Illinois and Rutgers back-to-back weeks at home, here's what they have on the horizon after that. They'd be 1-3. At Illinois, can't say that's a win. At home against Wisconsin, Ohio State, those would be sellouts, but only because if Nebraska fans don't want to go, Wisconsin and Ohio State will buy those.
Yeah.
If it was somebody, a nobody, October 7th or 14th, that could be where the sellout streak ends. At Purdue, Purdue is an approved team. So where I'm going with this is, if you lose the Rutgers, even if you don't, but let's say you do, you're 1-3, you got Illinois, let's say that you win that one, you're 2-3. Wisconsin, Ohio State at home, do you think you're winning those two? Probably not right now.
No.
2-5, you go to Purdue, I don't think they're going to win there. 2-6, they'd be 2-6 possibly, and it's conceivable they could be 1-7. Probably at best 3-5.
Yeah.
3-5 at best with a game at home against Northwestern. That's where I say the sellout streak might end. And Northwestern's not bad. Minnesota's not bad. They got Minnesota after that, Penn State, and Iowa. So if you want to really freak out of a Husker fan, if you can't be there or they're on the way at home, this is what Husker fans are thinking. That's 1-2. God, I hope we beat Rutgers. Who thought that ever happened in Nebraska football? So let's say you win that, 2-2. If you can't win Illinois at Purdue, you're 2-7? 2-7 going into your final three games. Minnesota on the road, you probably say lost, 2-8. Penn State on the road, lost, 2-9. And Iowa at home. You're looking, you could, this sounds crazy. I can't believe I'm even saying this as I look through the schedule. But this team could possibly go 2-10, 3-9, 4-8 seems the best they might be able to do right now. And I know it could change.
Yeah.
It things could change. Tanner Leak should quit throwing interceptions.
You're talking right now three more losses for sure.
Oh,
Ohio State, Wisconsin, Penn State. I mean, so you're 2-5, you're 1-5 there.
Yeah.
So you're on the cusp.
Probably at best you're 6-6.
Exactly.
And you could be 3-9, 2-10, 4-8. And Bill Callahan, as bad as he was, correct me if I'm wrong, I think the worst year Bill Callahan had was 5-7.
5-7, yeah.
So this does remind you a little bit of the Callahan era, not in regards to all the points. That was last week against Oregon. But even though they weren't blown out, they were embarrassing losses. Remember, KU put up 70-some on Nebraska? This is an embarrassing loss, even though it's a four-point game, because it's a MAC team that came into your house, and you got punked, and you lost to them. And you should have never lost to them. Two pick sixes, you basically handed them the game.
Yeah.
And now, you know, will they beat Rutgers? I don't know. I have no idea what to say about Nebraska. I knew going into the season they're young. They're inexperienced in positions. But here's the thing. A lot of people were putting a lot of stuff on social media about Nebraska. This is what they get for leaving the Big 12. This is what they get for taking more money. Okay, you're just bitter. Okay?
That has nothing to do
with it. That has nothing to do with it. The thing that has something to do with it, in my opinion, is that when Nebraska left the Big 12 for the Big 10, same thing for A&M to the SEC, same thing for Missouri leaving for the SEC, same thing for Colorado leaving the Big 12, is that recruiting is completely different.
Yeah, you changed your whole recruiting base.
That's the thing that was not really focused on when these schools left. Yeah, they took the money.
It was for us, and people just like, I know, just like brushing that off.
They just
to the
brushed
side.
It
like,
off.
Didn't even mean anything that Nebraska can't recruit Texas anymore.
Nebraska was very good at recruiting Texas. You have no Texas schools in the Big Ten. So why are kids going to want to play at Iowa, at Penn State, at a game at Minnesota? No, but when you sit here in the Big 12, you could say, well, hey, you got to go play Texas, Texas A&M, Texas Tech, of course, now TCU.
Baylor, TCU.
Baylor, you know. And you're in the SEC at Texas A&M, you can still say you play some teams out that region.
Yeah.
Okay, and that's why maybe A&M hasn't been the team that's fallen off as much, even though they haven't been as good as maybe some people thought. They've had some good years. It helped when they had Manziel for one, too. But Missouri has seen what's happened. The first couple years had some success, won a weak division. Now they're a mess. Colorado hasn't done anything special. The last year they had a good year. And then, of course, Nebraska has just been one of those teams in the Big Ten, where the Big 12, they were one of the big kahunas. You go to the Big Ten, they're just another fish in the sea, man. And so you got all more money, which is good. Probably the right move financially for Nebraska. But at the end of the day, it changed your entire recruiting landscape. And then you bring in a coach on top of that who's a West Coast guy. So now all this talk about, well, they brought recruits in from California and Fresno and Washington. I don't think you're beating out USC and UCLA for those best recruits to come to Nebraska. And then you're getting beat by teams that
east.
They got guys from Pennsylvania and Ohio and Iowa and Michigan, and then they're getting kids from Florida and Texas. Even those teams are, but Nebraska isn't. It's the recruiting part of it, I think, is going to end up catching up to Nebraska. Yeah. I mean, look at quarterback is a great example. You got a guy who transferred from Tulane as your quarterback. Why can't Nebraska draft a great quarterback? Not draft, recruit a great quarterback? Because nobody still thinks of them as a passing school, even though they are now. Yeah. And you know, if they were option team, they'd go with an option quarterback, and they'd find them pretty easy because nobody else wants an option quarterback anymore. But that's not the landscape. They changed their offense. They changed their coaching style. They changed coaches. They changed conferences. And now they changed ADs. They've got now an AD that's on the hot seat, a coach that's probably not as on the hot seat as the AD. You might even have a chancellor in the hot seat. And you got a team that's got a lot of issues, and they don't have much at quarterback. Tommy Armstrong covered up a lot of their deficiencies last year. You know what?
Yeah.
He made a lot of plays.
I don't know how much Nebraska fans appreciated him or not.
I think they are now.
They're going to beat Rutgers. I'll give them that. I'll tell you they'll beat Rutgers.
Back to 500. Okay, so you thought KU's bad, thought Nebraska's bad. What about Missouri? Missouri lost to Purdue 35-3. Somehow they're a 7-point favorite. I could not figure that out. I knew Purdue was going to win easily. I saw Purdue play earlier this year. They're good. They almost beat Louisville. 28-0 in the first quarter, but here's the great part about Missouri football. On a four-play run here, listen to this. Three consecutive false starts and then a holding penalty. Nobody was left in the stands. You see the pictures after the game, at the end of the game during the fourth quarter, third quarter? Weren't a lot there to start with. Barry Odom's a head coach in his second year, and he's in major trouble, believe it or not. 5-10. It's not the... See, once again, it's not about losing. It's about how they're losing. And that's why Turner Gill didn't get his full time. It's how you're losing.
Yeah.
When you're not competitive, you look unprepared as a coaching staff and as a team, and you do that at home, is there any wonder? I saw Missouri alums, players that were part of those SEC division champions, saying, okay, we worked so hard to put things on back on the map for Missouri football and make it the bowls and get people to pack the house, and now look where we're at, and they showed a picture of an empty stadium. That's how quickly things can change in football. And they're in the SEC where it's going to be harder to turn it around, I think.
Oh,
just my opinion.
Yeah.
Be careful what you wish for. Big 12 recap. Oklahoma State looked really good. I thought they were very impressive over Pittsburgh. I thought Pittsburgh could give them a bit of a game. I was wrong on that one. 59-21 was the final there. West Virginia rolled Delaware State. We mentioned KU losing. Iowa State, thank God for Iowa State. The Big 12 didn't go winless against the MAC. 41-14 over Akron. Baylor's 0-3. They lost to Duke. TCU, a nice win over SMU, 56-36. They play Oklahoma State next week or this week. Oklahoma blows out Tulane after a slow start, 56-14. We know Vandy won, 14-7 over K-State. Texas Tech outlasted Arizona State, 52-45. And the best game of the weekend was Southern Cal in Texas. What a game. I felt bad for Texas at the end of the game. I felt bad for their freshman quarterback. He played so well. And then he was fighting for extra yardage. I thought Texas was going to win the game there in double overtime. And then a smart play by the defensive lineman just came in and ripped the ball away. Got the fumble, and then they kicked the field goal, and they win 27-24 in double overtime. But that was a really nice performance by Texas, and that's where you sit here and scratch your head. How do you do what you did against Maryland, giving up 51 at home, which, granted, was week one, and then you do what you did against USC, which Texas team is going to show up the rest of the year? Because if that's the Texas team that shows up the rest of the year, Oklahoma State better be careful because they could easily lose to Texas. But if it's Texas that played against Maryland, then they probably got nothing to worry about. All right, the new top 25 poll is out. And Alabama is number one. Number two is Clemson. Oklahoma is three. Penn State, four. USC drops to five, a spot. Oklahoma State, six. Washington, seven.
Against
Michigan, eight.
Tennessee,
Wisconsin is nine. Ohio State is 10. And K-State falls out of the rankings. TCU is up to number 16. And that's it for the Big 12 then. I think I covered all of it. The only big thing here is Clemson jumped Oklahoma in the polls. They go to two over Oklahoma. Oklahoma's three. Clemson blew out Louisville. Clemson has two very big marquee wins over ranked teams, Auburn and Louisville. Alabama's beat Florida State on a neutral site. And Oklahoma, the big win out of Ohio State. I think you could mix all three of those, throw them in a hat, and any order would probably be okay right now. They're the three best teams in America. Don't think anybody's going to argue. That's the top 25 poll. My top four, we do this each week. I would debate it between Alabama and Clemson number one. Not that it really matters right now. I'll give Clemson number one just because they have one more marquee win. That was pretty impressive over Louisville, although I'm not sold on how good Louisville is. Alabama, I got two. Oklahoma at three. I hate to push OU down, but Clemson, that pushes them over OU. And Penn State at four, and I got Oklahoma State at five. That's my top five.
I've got Alabama one.
So Clemson didn't do enough to jump Alabama
They
for
did
you.
Do enough to jump Oklahoma.
But not Alabama.
Not for now.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. We'll see what happens.
SEC lover. Okay.
I know. Mm-hmm. I know. I'm
same order after that.
I'm pandering to those people.
Same order after that then? OU, Penn State?
No.
You got Oklahoma State?
Oklahoma State at four.
Ahead of Penn State?
Yeah. For a more impressive win over Pitt.
Okay. All right.
Because neither one of them played anybody outside of Pitt.
And Penn State beat them 33-14. Oklahoma State beat them 59-21. Yeah. So I got you. Makes sense. Okay.
That's the only reason.
NASCAR playoffs began over the weekend in Chicago, and getting it done was Martin Truex Jr., the number one seed. Who needs all those points going into the playoffs? He gets it done. Pretty dominant performance, and it's his fifth victory of the season, his second straight at Chicagoland, and the 12th of his career as he gets it done. Martin Truex Jr. leading the race for the Cup as he wins the first race there in Chicago, first race of the playoffs in NASCAR. And finally, we end with the Royals as the Royals ended the Indian streak. We said it was going to happen. Should have been Thursday night. Instead, it was Friday night. But still, they got it done. And then we said the Royals would lose 3 out of 4. And they did. And the Royals are not mathematically eliminated, but 5 back with, what, 13 to play? Yay. We knew it was over. Duffy pitched fairly well yesterday, although I still argue he shouldn't have pitched. Perez didn't play. Moustakas was out. Kane was out. Moose is still stuck on 36 homers. Will he get the record or not? I do not know. It's the Balboni curse. The curse of the Balboni.
Yeah.
Keeping Moose at 36. He's banged up. And the Royals go to Toronto to play their next 3 games. No need to go any further with that, do we?
No.
Congrats to the Royals on breaking
Give
the Indian
Moose
streak.
Another few days off, and then maybe
letting
we'll
get
have
the
a
record.
Chance.
That's about all that we're worried about, left. Isn't it, right?
Yep.
Moose getting the record. And then we can turn our attention to who they're going to sign or not sign in free agency. That's probably where we're going after that. The Royals now have a hard time just have a winning record now. 3 at Toronto, they're last place in the East. 3 at Chicago White Sox, last place in the Central, but the Royals struggled with them at home recently. 3 home against Detroit, 3 home against Arizona.
I mean, Arizona's the only good team there.
And Arizona might not have to play anybody those last 3 games. So you might be looking at the Royals being, wouldn't it be something the Royals go 81-81 again?
Yeah.
That would mean they're 500 since they won the World Series, exactly 162-162. Could happen, but right now they're 3 under, 73-76. So that's why everybody's talking Chiefs football and Royals baseball. Well, it's as if the season already is over. It really kind of is, but technically it's not. There's 13 games to play.